last week we began to begin the topic of kilayim, all the different forbidden mixtures in the Torah. And again, we mentioned it, well, let's recap what we said last week very quickly. We mentioned last week there are four different categories of laws that fall under the title of kilayim, forbidden mixtures. Last week we discussed two separate laws. One was the idea of crossbreeding animals, that we shouldn't crossbreed animals. And the second idea was what we call kilayizrayim, which is crossbreeding plants or planting plants too close to one another, mixing plants or trees. That was the second category we discussed last week. Now, we mentioned last week in passing, we didn't get to really go into them in depth. There are two more categories of law that are referred to as kilayim. One is plowing with two animals together, two separate species together, using two species together for any sort of work. And the fourth category is wearing shatnez, wearing clothing that's a mixture of wool and linen. So this week we'll try to discuss these final two categories of kilayim and try to bring out some of the messages and lessons within those categories. So I think at the very end of last week's class, we went through some of the basics of not plowing with a donkey and an ox. But let's just recap that one more time since we're starting that again this week. The Torah states in the book of Devarim, chapter 22, verse 10, it says, so I'll read it to you, the exact language here. Lusach rosh v'shor v'chamor yachdav, you shall not plow with an ox and a donkey together. So the Torah's simple prohibition is plowing with an ox and a donkey. Rashi tells us, based on the words of the Talmud, that it applies to any two species, not only an ox and a donkey, but any two species of animals. Most authorities are in agreement that it means one kosher with one non-kosher species. But technically, according to Torah law, two kosher species together would be okay, or two non-kosher species together would be okay. The rabbis rabbinically prohibited any two species, whether they be kosher or not. So we should not plow with any two species of animals together. Plowing also doesn't mean only plowing. Plowing was common work that was done in those days, but it means any sort of work. Whether it be pulling a wagon, carrying a load, plowing a field, whatever work you do with two different animals together would be a problem. If they're of the same species, it's okay. A human being is allowed to work with animals, it's fine. So if you want to pull a wagon along with your horse, that'd be okay to do. You can't have two different species of animal together. And we mentioned last week, there's also a question, the Talmud has a question which goes unanswered as to would we include a water species in this with a land species. Just the image of that's kind of a funny image of tying like a rope to like a whale or something and having it pull your plow, something like that. That's a question the Gemara has, and the Gemara does not resolve that issue. But those are the basic rules of plowing with a donkey and an ox. Now, it's a law which I don't think comes up for us nowadays. Even if you're a farmer, typically use tractors. We don't use animals to plow anymore. It happens to be in some countries they still do pull wagons with animals. You go to the Middle East, you see it in Israel, all over the place. So it could come up if you want to pull a wagon with two animals. You shouldn't tie two species together to the wagon. But again, in general, it's not going to be such a relevant mitzvah to us in terms of practical daily life. But again, we have to understand what's the Torah's message that comes from this mitzvah. So I want to go through some of the different ideas that are quoted in the sources as to what's the lesson of not plowing with an ox and a donkey together. So the first, I guess, most basic reason is quoted by several of the early commentaries, Nachmanides, Rabbeinu Bechaya, Maimonides, Rambam. And the idea is that we discussed last week how you can't crossbreed animals. So many authorities write that what you would do typically if you were doing work with two separate species is afterwards you would put them into the same stable. And that might lead to crossbreeding. So this prohibition of not plowing two species actually is an offshoot of not crossbreeding the species. That's what some say. However, the main approach is not based on crossbreeding. It's a whole different concept. And there's many different variations of this. We'll try to discuss a few of the variations. But many look at this as an issue of tsar balei chayim, of causing pain to animals. So, for instance, the Ibn Ezra, one of the early primary commentators on the Torah, he says that we know that an ox is much stronger than a donkey, typically. So if you tie an ox and a donkey to your plow, what's going to happen? The ox is going to pull ahead, and the donkey gets dragged along with the ox. It'll probably be either uncomfortable or dangerous or painful to the donkey to have to plow along with an ox, because the ox is much more powerful than the donkey. So the Ibn Ezra says, based on that, it's an issue of tzar balei chayim, not to cause any pain to the donkey. It wouldn't be appropriate to cause pain to the animal. Now we have this broad concept in the Torah called tzar balei chayim, causing pain to animals. which is something which actually is a hot topic nowadays, you know, in modern life. But the Torah definitely recognizes that we should be sensitive to animals, compassionate to animals, not cause them pain. It's understood that it's supposed to be a lesson for us in our own personal mitos. We're supposed to be compassionate people. So if we act with callousness towards animals, that means we're breeding callousness within ourselves, and we're becoming callous, insensitive people. So we have to be sure that we treat animals with care and respect and compassion, so that we train ourselves in being compassionate and caring people. And that's how most of the authorities understand this concept. So the Aben Ezra says that you have to be sensitive in how you pair up your team of workers. Because if you're two animals, one stronger than the other, it's going to cause one to fall behind. And again, I think we can take a lesson from that to more relevant places in our life. Which, let's say you're pairing up two people to do a job. Whether it be you're an employer, you're in charge of a committee, you're working together with a friend to accomplish something. But if you match up odd couples, where you know one person's going to be plowing far ahead of the other, that makes the person behind feel a little bit, you know, upset. They could be hurt. They can feel a little bit nervous. They could feel a little bit that they're not inadequate. They could feel the other person is just a little bit too rash, too hasty. But when you match up odd couples, it leads to tension, it leads to problems, to hurt feelings. So just like the Torah says, don't match up a donkey and the ox. So I think we could take a lesson not to match up people together who we know one person is going to be a much more different personality, more aggressive, more of a go-getter, maybe more skilled than his partner or her partner. So that's one lesson we find from not playing with a donkey and an ox together. Another related approach is said by other commentaries, and they point out that we know that the ox is a kosher animal. So one of the signs of a kosher animal is it chews its cud. The donkey is not a kosher animal, it doesn't chew its cud. So the ox and donkey are tied together to the same wagon or the same plow, and the donkey is watching the ox all day long. He's constantly chewing. All day. And the donkey thinks, wow, this ox has food to eat all day long, and I'm starving. And the poor donkey doesn't get hungry and be distressed because he has no food. He doesn't understand, well, it's really how the stomach works. And he just sees the ox chewing all day long and thinks he has something good to eat, and I don't have anything to eat. So again, it will cause the donkey distress. And here we're not talking about physical distress, we're talking about, you know, an appetite. So not only do we have to be sensitive to the animal's physical pain, but even to his, we'll call it emotional pain. He's going to feel that he's left out, he's deprived, he's very hungry, and his partner here in plowing seems to be eating constantly. So again, we can relate that to lessons for ourselves as well. You know, sometimes maybe you're with somebody, and you know, you have your lunch, another person doesn't, you know? So maybe you want to share with them. But if you can't share with them, to eat it in front of their face, when they're starving, you're not. You know, it's a little insensitive. I don't mean anything about that, Phil. I think I wasn't pointing to you.
Is this different from the concerns with Tzar
Malachayim? No, it is Tzar Malachayim. I think it's a different level. This is more of an emotional level than a physical level. But I think we can apply it to ourselves in many ways. Often you're with someone, you're snacking, the person's eyeing your food. So either you put it away or you share with them. But to eat in front of somebody who's going to be jealous or hungry isn't really... No, Phil, you can eat, enjoy. Yeah, right? Lunch, you can learn. I think we all had lunch already, so nobody's jealous of your food. But that's the concern of the one of the concerns of the donkey along with the ox, which that would help us understand why it's only a kosher with an unkosher animal, because kosher animal chews its cud, and non-kosher animal doesn't. So any pair of a kosher and non-kosher animal is going to have that issue that the kosher animal is constantly chewing, and the non-kosher animal doesn't have anything to chew.
Foothoof
is chewing its cud, yeah.
I can't remember if there's some that chew the cud but don't have the split hoof.
There's, I think, one or two exceptions to our list. Iron Shafan and our Nevis, whatever those things are. It's unclear. Those are two exceptions to the rule. But those are exceptions. Those are exceptions. I mean, the third list that has exceptions. This is beware, these are exceptions. Those are exceptions. And the camel. That's the camel also. Right. Shafan or Nemes and the camel. And the pig has split hooves, doesn't chew its cud.
Right.
Right. But those are looked at as exceptions to the rule. Those aren't the rule. So therefore, at least we still understand that typically you're going to have that issue. It's true. But Torah's not making an exception for that. You cannot plow with a camel in your ox either, even though the camel chooses its kind. But this is a general idea that typically you're going to have this issue. The Sefer HaChinuch writes another interesting concept, again, a related concept, which is that, you know, animals always are fearful of one another. Most animals are going to be nervous or anxious around other species. Most species keep to themselves. So if you put two different species together to work, they're going to be working with anxiety, with fear of the other species next to it. Maybe it's going to attack, it's going to take its food, it's going to do something. You know, because animals, and that's the nature of animals, is that they stick to their own species and they don't understand how to deal with other species. So if you tie two species together to do work for you, and they're in such proximity to one another, he says it's going to cause also pain or anxiety to these animals, cause them to be fearful, and that would be causing pain to the animal. And he then writes again the same idea, that we have to apply this to people as well. Let's say you're the head of a committee in shul, and you know there's two people that don't quite get along with one another. So for you to assign them to the same job, you're asking for trouble. Because there's going to be either a fight, there's going to be tension, there's going to be discomfort, there's going to be anxiety, there's going to be something going wrong there. You have to be very careful of who you assign to jobs if you're someone who is heading up a project. And that's the Sefer HaChinuch writes, that we should take the lesson from the animals and apply it to people. Some people are nervous around one another, fearful around one another, etc. We have to make sure that we don't breed any additional worry or anxiety or tension amongst people. A very important lesson. The Baal HaTurim understands it. He takes it a little more symbolic. It's all symbolic as is, but he takes it even more symbolic. And he says that since the ox is a kosher animal and the donkey is not a kosher animal, the ox represents a good person and the donkey represents a wicked person. And he says that this mitzvah symbolically tells us that we should not befriend wicked people. That we should steer clear of those people who are evil or wicked out there. That's what the Baal HaTurim writes. And one additional commentator, the Ralbag, he writes that the Torah wants us to be well aware of which species are kosher and non-kosher. So he gives us this mitzvah, when you're about to plow your field, stop and check it out, and you'll see that there's an inherent difference between these animals. And the more we become versed and familiar with which animals are kosher and non-kosher, the easier it will be to keep the laws of kosher. That's essentially what the Ralbag writes. And he wants us to understand there is an inherent difference between these different species. It's not a random selection, but you'll see that there's kosher animals and they have these characteristics. Non-kosher animals don't have these characteristics. And overall, we'll be able to understand more the difference between the two.
Okay. Big question. What does kilayim, the word kilayim, mean?
Kilayim? Loosely a mixture. And you know, if you look more at the roots of it, it means to be held back. We mentioned last week, holding yourself back.
Okay, so I think it originally refers to mixing of species in terms of like genetic, right?
Well, I mean, it's applied to all to this category, to four different categories. I mean, that's one application of the word kilayim. I mean, it says kilayim, animals should be used as kilayim. It says you can have kilayim in your field. Mixing the wool and linen's kilayim. These are all referred to as kilayim.
So, I mean, does it have to do with crossbreeding specifically? Or no?
Not specifically. That's what I'm saying. It's a more generic term. It's mixtures, but not necessarily crossbreeding. I mean, you're right. This is a different concept in that there's no produce of a mixture of
behavior rather than into crossbreeding of animals.
But it's saying that you should hold back. These animals have such different natures. Don't try to have them become partners either. I don't think it's not a derivative, it's actually kilayim. Just kilayim has, the term kilayim is applied in four different areas. The same term is used throughout, you know, in all these areas. So the common denominator is mixtures, bad mixtures. Some mixtures may be crossbreeding and actually have an offspring that are a mixture, and some just mean you've mixed them in other ways. Some even want to throw into the idea of kilayim mixing meat and milk together. That's not mentioned in the Torah. But you say also that's a forbidden mixture, and
it's a forbidden mixture, but it's not included.
It's not including kilayim in general, but some people want to relate the mitzvahs. That it's another forbidden mixture, and it relates to any kilayim. Any forbidden mixture relates to kilayim. Rav Hirsch, Rav Shimshon Fol Hirsch, he writes another concept, which he says: as you harness your animals, so you're about to harness your animals, ready to get them to work. You have to realize that just as God keeps species separate, so too we have to understand that we Jews have to remain separate as well. I mean, Rav Hirsch is saying that any form of kilayim, in a sense, has a message to us. That just like species are supposed to remain to their own species, we Jews have to regard ourselves as unique and different. And it's a message we get in many points in life, but also when we're about to harness our animals, we have that same message. That's what Rav Hirsch writes. Now, I would add to Rav Hirsch's idea, which is that when you're about to harness an animal, you're about to take a living being and subjugate it. You're about to say, okay, I'm putting a harness upon this ox. It's going to work for me. It's like slavery in a certain sense. You're now taking another living being and having it work for you. So to add on to Rav Hirsch's idea, I would say that whenever you're about to exert control over a living being, you have to recognize that you're not the one in control of the world. Because when you have to exert control over an animal, it can go to your head. You can say, look how powerful I am. I can take this massive, powerful ox, and I can make it subject to my own will. And we might become arrogant. We might think that, you know, look how much powerful we are. So God says, not so fast. At that moment, realize that I'm the boss, and you can't do what you want. There's some rules you have to stick to here. If there's no rules, when you harness your animal, then it goes to your head. I mean, you find many places in the Torah where the more likely we are to become arrogant, the Torah then slaps more laws upon us. Like, for instance, the king. The king is the most powerful Jew alive. You know, King David, the Jewish king. And the Torah says, well, he has to carry with him a Torah scroll every moment of his life. Because he's got to realize that he's not really the king. He is the king, but there's a king of all kings on top of him. The Talmud tells us that when a king says Shemona Esrei, he bows down at the beginning, and he remains in a bowed position the entire time through. Because he has to act the most humble. Since he is somebody who's likely to become arrogant, he has to exhibit humility in the strongest way. So even though we only bow down, you know, in two different brachos in Shemona Esrei, he bows down the entire time through the king when he's praying. So the greater you are, the more you have to recognize how God is above you. So you don't think you're in control and let your ego think the best of you. So I would say that also applies here. You're about to commit an act, which is a very powerful act. An act of, you know, in ways it can act of arrogance. I'm about to harness a living being and have it do my will. So we're allowed to use animals. It's okay. The Torah doesn't prohibit us from using animals. The Torah says, though, just hold on 1 second. Just realize that when you're about to harness an animal, there's a God above, and you're not the one in charge of the world. He is. Therefore, you have to follow certain guidelines in order to harness this animal. That's another deep meaning we can find in the mitzvah, in the prohibition of not harnessing the ox and donkey to do your work. So those are all some concepts that are discussed in different commentaries. Now, I'd like to take it one step deeper. Now, we already got a little bit deep. Let's think even deeper with this. I mean, every single mitzvah in the Torah, as we always discuss, has layers and layers of meaning, more basic meanings, deeper meanings, more symbolic meanings, more spiritual meanings. So I want to share with you a deeper approach to this mitzvah from two different angles, which I once heard in a class from my Rebbe, Rabbi Lubyansky, from the yeshiva. He once spoke about this at length, and he gave two different deeper understandings of this mitzvah. They go just beyond the harnessing of, go beyond what we've said. So, if we think about it, you know, every single creature in this world has its physical appearance, but also has a spiritual meaning to it. Everything represents something more. There's a reason why when the blessings were given to the different tribes, both by Yaakov and by Moshe, they're compared to animals very often. Yehuda's compared to a lion, Yisachar's compared to a donkey, Adon's compared to a snake. Because a snake represents more than just a snake. It represents something deeper, something higher. A donkey has a higher meaning. Everything has a higher meaning as well. So you have the physical donkey, and you have the spiritual concept of what a donkey represents. So if we think about, we have to think about what does the donkey and the ox represent? What do these animals represent to us? And then what would be the terrible mixture that would result if they're put together? And remember thinking now on a more conceptual, symbolic level, not on a physical level. In life, I think there's two major motivations for people. And all of us kind of have a mixture of the two within us. But some people are motivated by one more than the other. And what are these major motivations? So some people are very driven to accomplish. People who are very driven for power, for honor, they're very idealistic. They'll push and they'll fight and they'll work very hard to get to the top. That's one type of person. Some people are more interested in relaxation and comfort, taking it easy, and they're not so driven to push themselves higher. You know, they'll make do with what they have and just try to relax. And, you know, some people we see extremes of these, other people are kind of a mixture of the two. But those are, I think, two different extremes in life. And different people relate to different categories. So people who exhibit this motivation of that were driven to succeed and to push and to be on the top and to be powerful. So often these people will be willing to deprive themselves of sleep and comfort to get there. The person wants to get to the promotion, to be the manager of his division. He'll work later hours, he'll skip meals, he'll go in on the weekends, he'll be sure to work very, very hard, because he's very driven, and at times he's going to ignore his own personal comfort to get there. So that's one extreme. We have some people who are very happy to sit on the couch and relax, you know, watch a movie, have a beer, and even in power and accomplishment don't really speak, they're not looking for promotions, they're looking for relaxation. And again, everyone else falls somewhere in between. But those are our extremes. So this first model, the person is very driven, is compared to an ox, to a shore, an ox. An ox is called the geyesh of behemos. The rabbis call the ox the most, we'll call it arrogant of animals. And of course, the ox is an arrogance in terms of, you know, he doesn't walk around like, you know, I'm the best around. He's just an ox. But the ox is something which is, well, he's like a steam engine. You know, he was the ancient tractor. He keeps on pushing and pushing. You strap on something to him and he pulls it and he'll plow your fields. He'll pull your wagon. He'll do anything you want because he's just a big, you know,
ox.
Ox of, yeah, right, like an ox, you know. It's power, it's energy. That's how you view an ox. Hey, you picture the engine of a train and you can strap on 100 cars behind it. It'll keep on pushing and pushing it and pulling it along. So as long as you attach something to it, the ox will keep on pushing. So the ox represents the driven, the ambitious person, the energetic person with a drive to really, really accomplish and to make it to the top. The other model is compared to a donkey. The word in Hebrew for donkey, chamor, has the same letters as the word chomer. Chomer is material. A donkey is like a physical lump of flesh. That's what a donkey is. A donkey was, in the ancient world, even nowadays, is used to carry on heavy loads. It doesn't push and pull, but you can load onto it because it's a big hump of flesh. You load on a heavy load, it bears the load. But a donkey, the Hebrew word for donkey is chamor, related to chomer. And that represents the person who's more willing to just, you know, lay back, relax, you know, take it all in, but not pushing to get to the top. Now, both these traits could be very positive. You know, Yosef is referred to as a shore. He's compared to a shore, to an ox. And Yosef was someone who represented leadership. He's a role model for the brothers. He was ambitious to make it to the top. Yosef is somebody who we look at as driven. And that's a good trait, to be a driven, ambitious person. People, you know, we need people who are going to lead and going to push and going to accomplish. We need those type of people around. Even the trait of a donkey, meaning being more subdued, humble, relaxed, staying still, not pushing, is also good for some people. The tribe of Yisachar is compared to a donkey. Yisachar Chamor Gorem. And Yisachar was a tribe which was known to have excelled in scholarship and Torah study. Because they were able to sit still and just study and study and study and study. They had no drive to push themselves out and to build and to lead. But they were able to take in all the information, to be scholars, and that was considered a very positive way of being a donkey. You load up the burden of Torah upon yourself. So you're not driven to go out and to fight and to build and to lead, but you're willing to sit inside a room and just keep on studying. And they became the scholars of the Jewish people. They were able to answer a lot of questions. They were able to be the authorities in terms of Torah study. So that's a positive use of these traits. However, they can also be very negative. Some people who are very driven to get to the top, it breeds arrogance. They become power hungry. They push others out of the way. You know, these terrible dictators you find in the world. That's who they are. All they want is power. And if you get my way, I'm going to toss you out of the way. I'm going to squash you, or I'm going to kill you to get to the top. So this trait of the ox, this drivenness, could be a very negative thing. Another way around as well. Somebody who's like the donkey. So that person can just succumb to laziness, to materialism, to gluttony, and waste away their lives. So somebody who has the ability to sit still and is not driven to build, that person could use it to study and to become great in Torah study, or could just become lazy and wasteful and waste away their life sitting on the couch doing nothing. So those are the two negative aspects of these traits. But that's the idea, that's represented in a more conceptual level of the shore and the chamor, the ox and the donkey. The ox is this driven personality, and the donkey is this very subdued, you know, I don't call it more lazy or more subdued or more humble personality. So the Torah says, don't mix together the ox and the donkey. Don't let them plow together. So what does that mean, again, in this conceptual level? It's telling you this combination of these two traits can be very dangerous. In the negative sense. I mean, you can have, in the positive sense, they're great. But in the negative sense, it can be very dangerous. Why? Let's take our examples again. You have the guy compared to the donkey. We'll call him Mr. Couch Potato, right? He's someone who just sits, relax, he has his chips, he can enjoy himself, he's not so driven to accomplish or to make more money or to hit to the top. So that person, you can sit them down, and you can, probably already sitting down, you can walk over to them, and you can convince them, you know, what you're doing right now is you're wasting your life, you have so much you can accomplish, so much to offer the world, you have so much potential, why don't you take your skills and use it for the good? So you can speak to that person, and that person hopefully will be able to direct their life in a more positive manner. Somebody's very driven, we said it's like the steam engine. So you strap on the right cars behind, and he's going to, so instead of, you know, building up his own arrogance, he can build up a business and support the community. He can build up a shul. He can build up a community center. He can build up a lot because he's so driven. He can support his family and he can give to institutions around. He can make a lot of money. He can do a lot of good things. But he can strap on the right cars behind him. So if he's leading, if the wrong cars are strapped on, it becomes very dangerous. If the right cars are connected to the steam engine, then it can be a very positive thing. The most dangerous person, though, the most dangerous combination, is that, let's say a person deep down, all they want is materialism and food. They have no ambitions for anything beyond their own personal pleasure. However, they have the skills to be able to lead and to build, and they're very driven in that manner. But deep down, they're doing it all just for their own personal selfishness, because they want to have pleasure in life. So that person is driven really by selfishness and greed and personal pursuit of pleasure, which we compare to the donkey. However, they have the ability to push forward and lead like the ox. That's a very dangerous combination. That's how you end up with selfish, evil dictators. That's how you end up with people who are able to get to the top but don't care about anyone else around them. That person, you can't tell that person, why don't you get off the couch and try to accomplish something, because he's already trying to accomplish something. And you can't convince him that the trains you're pulling are the wrong sort of trains, because he's doing it for his own personal selfishness. He can't be convinced otherwise, because he wants to have the pleasure. And it feeds off of itself. It becomes a very negative combination. That's how you end up with people who are at the top, but are arrogant, selfish, you know, good for nothing, mean people, because they're driven by selfishness, but they're driven. So the two coming together is a very negative combination. The Talmud tells us a phrase. It says that, you know, the Jews are blamed throughout all of the Tanakh for worshipping idols. And the Talmud says one of the primary motivations of worshipping idols, it says, the reason they served idols was because they wanted to permit for themselves sexual immorality. That's what they wanted to do. So this idea of immorality was this promoting a personal pleasure. The idea of idolatry was an idealism. So you try someone who's that, the person says, I'm idealistic. I believe this idol is everything. Deep down, why is he saying that? Because he wants to shirk off the Torah's laws and do what he wants to do. So you can't convince this person otherwise, because if you tell him, well, you're just a pleasure seeker, he says, well, what do you mean? I'm doing it because I want to serve the idols. If you say, well, the idols are wrong, so he can't be intellectually honest, because he's doing it for his own pleasure. So it's going to feed off one another and end up this person can never change. Because anytime you're feeding off your own personal drive for pleasure, it's hard to convince yourself otherwise because you want to have the pleasure. And if you can claim it's idealism, then you say, it's not me, it's not my own personal pleasure, it's because I feel this is true, I feel this is right. So if those two things come together, it ends up being a very negative combination. So this is a much deeper conceptual meaning of do not plow with the ox and the donkey together. That when you take these two traits in people and you combine them, then you end up with a very dangerous combination if they're used for evil. Now, if they're used for good, it's a very good thing. If you take somebody who has the ability to, has humility, has ability to sit and study Torah, but also has the ability to lead and to build, that's a true Jewish leader. But the person is only able to sit and take in for their own personal relaxation and build for their own personal needs, that's how you end up with evil dictators. So that's one deeper meaning of not plowing with the ox and donkey. A second and related type of meaning, again, we're still going on the deeper level, what does it mean an ox and a donkey? So you have the, we could say in the world, I mean, again, in general, you really have three types of people in the world. And again, this is extremes, but you have people who we can say are totally good through and through. You have people who would say are evil through and through. And again, those are extremes which are hard to really find. And everyone else is kind of complex. Everybody else is like, you know, we have our difficulties and our challenges. We have our good motivations or our bad motivations. We're selfish, but yet we're compassionate. You know, everyone else is kind of a complex hybrid of, you know, of good and evil. All of us have within us different urges and motivations within. So Which is the hardest to deal with? Somebody who's absolute good is absolute good. That person's great. You meet some people, and you just tell, this people is good through and through. There's nothing I can point to that says this person. No. And it's a rare type of person. Some people just feel goodness emanates from them. You have some people who you know are just evil people. You have, you know, a Hitler. You just know this person's evil through and through. And he's not going to influence a person who's thinking. I mean, we're looking back. I don't want to talk about what happened in Germany. If you take someone who you know is wicked, you person knows wicked through and through, that person's not going to affect you because, you know, that person is evil. I'm not going to associate with that person. You know how to back off. Someone who's very good, you know that you should embrace that person. Now, somebody who's a little bit complex, well, it's hard to know sometimes. Is this person going to be a good person to associate with or not? Sometimes a person may be deceptive. You know, on the surface, they look like they're good people, and deep down, they're rotten at the core. And sometimes it could be that the person is not deceiving you, but the person truly is a mixture. And therefore, when you befriend that person, you know there's negative influences that come from that person. The person's not a bad person through and through. But these are the situations in life which are a little more complicated, because you see there's good and there's bad. You know, let's take a few different examples. I was just reading a book for a second time. It's called Go, My Son. It's a great book. I highly recommend this book, Go, My Son. It's a story of a Jew who ended up miraculously in the Soviet Union during World War II. His family was killed by the Nazis, but he escaped to the Soviet Union. And it tells us his miraculous salvation, you know, how he ended up really traveling the entire Soviet Union and survived. He kept mitzvahs along the way. It's an amazing story, written very well. I recommend it. It's called Go, My Son by Chaim Shapiro. But he writes in there that there was one point where he was accused of being a spy. Several points he was accused of being a spy, and so, you know, that was a common practice. And they threw him into a dark prison cell. Nearly a solitary confinement, but there was one other person in the cell with him. And he had remembered that he was told that often the Soviets would plant informers in your prison cell. So they tried to befriend you and win over your confidence, and then you would share yourself with this informer, and he'd bring it back to the police or to the, you know, whichever Russian body was prosecuting you. So he says he's in this prison cell, and again it was dark. It was a terrible situation. It was solitary confinement, and there's a person in a cell with him, and they started bringing down food rations, and they only gave it to the other prisoner. And this guy at first is very strange. You know, he smelled like he was there for like months and months, hasn't showered. But this guy starts being very friendly. He starts sharing his food. I'm with Chaim Shapiro. And Chaim at first is saying, hey, this guy's, you know, he's befriending me. He's being very nice to me, you know, and he was coming a little closer with him. And then he realized what he had already learned prior, which is that he's very likely an informer trying to befriend me so that he can report back to the authorities. So this person, so that's a situation where the person is quite a mixture, because on the surface he's very friendly, compassionate, he's giving up his food rations for a fellow prisoner. But deep down, likely this person was rotten at the core. And that's a very difficult situation to be in, because you don't know who this person is. You don't know what this person's like. So that's one example. But I think we also have more practical examples. Many things in life we know both have good and evil within them. You know, we all know, we discussed last week, alcohol. Alcohol we know can be used in very positive ways or very dangerous ways. And sometimes it's if you're in a gray area, is this about to be used in a positive way or a negative way? Modern technology. So we know that, say, if the internet is used in many positive ways, it has many dangers on it. Some people can become addicted to terrible things or perform terrible acts on the internet, while other people can use it in very positive ways to save time and to educate themselves and to build businesses. And, you know, it can be used in very positive ways. But that's why it's a mixed bag, and that's why it can be a challenge, because sometimes if it's bad, you walk away. If it's good, you embrace it. If it's in this gray area, so you're not really sure what to do. Should I embrace it, or should I steer clear? And that's the most difficult area of life. No, in the original sin was that Adam and Eve, they ate from the tree, Itadas Tovara, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. So commentators explain, what's the idea of good and evil? It was a mixture. You know, before they ate from the tree, good was good, evil was evil, and there was never confusion. This tree, when they ate from the tree, it blurred the lines. No longer was good always good. Good wasn't always good, evil wasn't always evil. Some things were confusing. Which is the life that we live in. We live in a life where things are confusing sometimes. Some things seem so innocent and so good, and they're terrible. Some things look like they're very difficult and terrible, and they're actually good. And sometimes we don't know how to figure it out. We don't know how to choose what's right and what's wrong. So on a deeper level, we talked about before how the ox represents the kosher animal, which represents that which is good. The donkey is the treif animal, represents that which is evil. if we recognize both of what they are, it's not a problem. You can plow with two donkeys, it's not an issue, because, okay, you know these things are evil. You can plow with two oxen, you know these two things are good, and you embrace them. However, when you mix the two together, again, on a symbolic level, that's a very dangerous thing, because once good and evil become the mixture, that's where life gets very challenging. And the challenge we live with since the original sin of Adam and Eve, to this very day, we live with that challenge, that we never, most of our lives are trying to figure out what's right and what's wrong, what's good, what's evil, what's kosher, what's not. And that's what we're trying to figure out. So when you mix together the donkey and the ox, that's the dangerous combination. Each one on its own, you're able to, as long as you can classify what it is, you're okay. But once they come mixed together, that's when you have an issue. There's a very fascinating comment made by the Meshech Chachma, Rav Meir Simcha of Divinsk. He writes this commentary in the Torah, that Yaakov is about to confront his brother Esav. After he had fled from him for many years, Yaakov fears for his life. He fears Esav wants to kill him. And he sends a messenger to Esav. And one of the messages he sends to his brother Esav, he tells him, Vayihili shor v'chamor, son v'eved v'shivcha. So he tells his brother, I have an ox and a donkey and sheep and slaves and maidservants, and I'm sending to tell my master in order so I can find grace in his eyes. So the Meshech Chachma points out, why is Yaakov informing him, I have an ox and a donkey? So he says, like, on a deeper level, Yaakov was saying, I've kept my ox and my donkey separate. I have an ox and a donkey, but the two are not combined. He doesn't mention his other animals. I mean, he mentions his sheep, but he also had camels, and he had other animals as well. But he says that on a deep level, Yaakov is alluding to this concept. That Yaakov is telling him, you know, even though I've been in my evil father-in-law's house for many years, my sense of good and evil is still clear. I keep my oxes and my donkeys separate. I still know right from wrong. And that's the message he was conveying to his brother. So again, that's a much deeper interpretation of that verse. That's the commentary of Meshech Chachma. But for us, those are two deep lessons you find in not plowing with the ox and a donkey. Number one is that the when you combine that person who is very driven with selfish, materialistic attitudes, you end up with a very dangerous leader. And the other concept is, if you were to mix mixtures of good and evil are the most dangerous combinations in life, because that's where we have confusion of what to do. So I think we're out of time. We're not going to make it to Shatnez today. We'll do that next week. I'll just recap what we've said. So this idea of not plowing the shor v'chamor, an ox and a donkey, it's something which on the halachic level, in terms of the prohibition, you cannot plow two animal species together. And plowing, it could be plowing, it could be doing any sort of work where you tie two species together, you can't do that. The basic lessons stem from the idea of tsar bali chayim, causing pain to animals, whether it be because one animal is stronger than the other, whether it be because one animal is constantly chewing its cud, the other one gets jealous of the food, whether it be that animals fear one another, and you don't want to put together two predators or two animals that are anxious of being around the other, because it's not being sensitive to the animals' emotions. Those are lessons to us as well when it comes to human beings, that we have to be very aware of pairings that we make, that if we're going to pair people together or work with others, we have to make sure we are sensitive to how they feel working with us or working with others as well. Then we got to this deeper concept, these two deeper concepts, that the shor v'chamor, the ox and donkey, represent either the ox is the driven person, the donkey is the more sedated person, we'll call it. And you have the idea of the ox being the righteous, kosher animal, the donkey representing the evil, non-kosher animal, and the mixture of these two things can end up being a very, very complex and dangerous situation. So we'll stop with that for the day. Yeah.